Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, I have, it's New Year's, I'm thinking about life in the Old South. We're going to talk about life in the Old South and what it was like in the olden days and what people ate. It's this thing that I'm obsessing with, this being New Year's, and we're thinking about old times gone. We also think about New Year's resolutions, and David Preston, my friend David, who's a good listener, is insistent that I answer this question because he's asked me twice. So, what do I need to do? What kind of New Year's resolution should we have for St. Augustine Lawns in 2020? And I've been thinking about this, and I'm going to say this, because I think it's right. And I think it's the most important New Year's resolution for lawns. You should make a New Year's resolution that you should not expect your St. Augustine lawn to be any more perfect than you are. Now, that's a good resolution. And it's a good one to think about. People who believe they're perfect, David, I don't believe you think you're perfect. People who believe they're perfect are going to have a problem with their St. Augustine lawn, no matter what. But people, you have to understand that lawns aren't perfect. Lawns always have problems. And it's good to understand that. Every lawn's going to have a problem. And particularly in our climate, there's nothing natural about a lawn. There's nothing particularly unnatural about having a little bit of grass either. Having a huge expanse of it creates problems that we're never going to be able to get over, no matter what. But St. Augustine's a good lawn. It's a good lawn. The thing that makes the most difference, after realizing that it's just a lawn, it's just something that should feel soft underneath your feet, mostly, and that should mostly cover your yard, and you should not expect to survive where the dogs are running or digging. None of those things are gonna, it's just not gonna work. But it's a nice way to get from one part of the yard to another. That's what a lawn is. It's this kind of place that allows you to pause and look around your yard at the flowers and vegetables and blueberries and fruits and dog runs. Whatever else, it's what a lawn is about. Just kind of a nice place. Not a perfect place. Not a thing in itself. Just that. But if you want a good, nice place to walk around on, the most important thing for any lawn, and particularly for St. Augustine, is making sure that you cut it at the right height. But David, you know that story. You know that story better than me by now. And getting that organic matter into the soil to help build up the levels of organic matter in the soil. So I would even go this far, David. I would even go this far. I wouldn't take it too seriously, because you don't want to take your lawn too seriously, any more seriously than you take yourself. If you take yourself too seriously, you're going to take your lawn too seriously, and then you got a problem. But just go out and say, you know, I could make my lawn a little bit happier if I took some bags of leaves and my lawnmower and mulched up those bags of leaves right in the lawn. Just spread them out across the lawn, not too thick, and just take my lawnmower and mulch them down. How's that? And you can build up topsoil that way pretty quickly and make your lawn pretty happy. And I would think that's one of the better things you could do for your lawn. It's not something people talk about a lot. But there it is, and it would be a great time of year to do it. David, does that help? Besides, as long as you're doing the first thing, realizing that your lawn making a resolution that you not expect your lawn to be more perfect than you are. And secondly, get some bags of leaves, just spread them out on the lawn, mulch them down with your mulching lawnmower this time of year. Be great. It really can help to build soil there. And building that soil is one of the most important things for the lawn. Somebody will ask me, does it acidify the lawn? And I will say no. If you want to ask me why, feel free to give me a call. We can talk about it. It certainly will not acidify our lawns. If it could acidify a lawn significantly, that would be a benefit in the soils where it could acidify the soil. But it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. It's actually going to raise the pH. It's going to alkalinize the lawn. Spreading leaves, mulching them in, I think it's a huge benefit to the to those soils. So give it a try, David. See if that doesn't help a lot. You know, I've done that before. I do that all the time with the leaves that fall on my lawn. Just mulch them in. I don't rake them up. Goodness gracious. Unless I need them somewhere else. But, you know, raking's a lot of trouble. I prefer other people to do my raking for me. There it is. There's the honest truth. Let other people do the raking. Let them put it in bags. If I've got leaves on my lawn, I just mulch them with the mower. There it is. It's that simple. Works really well. But you could take bags of leaves, spread it out on the lawn, mulch it up. It'd be really good. You know, I really want to talk about these folks who are on Dauphin Island when it's not an island. This is 10,000 years ago. It's hills. These are looking out from the hills of Dauphin Island across the great plain of what is now the Gulf of Mexico. That's what life was like for the first people who came to the Mobile area. They came in, they looked in, you know, about where Brooklyn is. Or if they came from the other side, you want to imagine, they looked out from that bluff about where Blakely is, those great bluffs, and looked out across this big valley, way below, deep below. I got to imagine, you know, it was these maybe 100-foot slopes in places where you're looking out across this gigantic valley, which was cut by the Alabama River, and which is now Mobile Bay. That's what it was. There wasn't the delta wasn't where it was. That was just the river itself, and part of a big valley there where the delta was, and they were traveling along this river. This band of folks looking for a good place to live, a good place to eat, and they come to the hills of Dauphin Island. And it's not an island in those days. You can just walk across. You walk through the forest, and suddenly you start climbing these hills. And those hills, that's Dauphin Island, what we now call Dauphin Island. And they were looking out from there, and the shoreline was well south of where they are. What was life like for them? They were watching the shoreline retreat. Maybe it was happening so slow that they barely realized, but you know, I think at some point they had to recognize that it was happening, because their ancestors talked about a place much farther south where they used to go to hunt the last of the mastodons, to hunt the glyptodonts, to hunt the wild horses and the buffalo and the camelids. Well south of where Dauphin Island is, and the forest that extended south of there. But those forests weren't there anymore. It was now shoreline. It was ocean. And maybe they were perceptive enough to realize that shoreline was retreating pretty quickly. And eventually that shoreline would be where it is now. And Dauphin Island would be indeed an island. But they were looking out. What did they eat? And it wasn't, you know, I think it's important to know that it wasn't corn. It was things like sumpweed. Those of you who are along the coast may recognize that sumpweed is really a great, we've kind of forgotten the great nutritious vegetables of the Gulf Coast. Sumpweed is what we call it now. It probably had other nicer, more important names when it was one of the primary foods. but they would collect iva. IVA is the Latin name for this fruit, and it had lots of seeds, and it was much higher in protein than wheat or corn, it was an important part of their diet. It would have been very important. Certainly, they would have picked what I now call Christmas berry. A lot of people call it Christmas berry, wolf berry, Lycium caroliniana. It grows in those marshes all along there, and I think it would have been far more common in those days on the shell hash and in other places. They would have been eating that too, and they would have eaten very well. It's a tomato relative. It's really quite delicious. Still grows there, both these plants. This would have been the kinds of foods they were looking for, the kinds of foods they were eating, along with the shellfish, which we used to have. You remember when we used to have oysters in Mobile Bay? Oh, my goodness. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Vanna, you're absolutely right. That is just extremely ugly Satsuma fruit. You know, it looks like some kind of mite. It's not typical of citrus mite damage. Looks like something tried to get in the fruit, and the fruit responded. I'll have to say it is kind of funky. I haven't seen that before, not to that degree, but I'll take a look and try to figure it out. I don't think that's just sun, and I don't think it's just heat. Something else seemed to have happened to this fruit. It is really quite astonishing. David, yes. So I told David wanted a resolution for the New Year's for his St. Augustine, and the first resolution, I always have to start this way: don't expect your lawn to be any more perfect than you are. The second thing I told him to do was to mulch, and I think that'll make a big difference. Of course, David responds, well, of course, I have plenty of leaves to mulch because I got water oaks over my lawn. And that's going to be a big problem. You know, David, one thing I can tell you is the lower limbs of that water oak are going to be very competitive for sunlight with the grass, of course. And you know that you're not going to have a lot of grass underneath those water oaks at all. And they're really going to compete horrendously with the grass. And it's just one of those issues. If the water oaks make you happy, well, then just have water oaks, and don't worry too much about the St. Augustine grass. It's very hard to have good grass under live oaks or water oaks, unless they're very mature. Very mature water oaks are going to fall on your house, but they'll be open enough that you get good grass growing underneath them. There it is. Very old live oaks, after about 70 years, they open up, and underneath them you can get a little more grass as the limbs begin to spread and they get more sunlight penetrating through those limbs. So there's one way to think about it. Some great pictures from Dan. Beautiful broccoli that Dan's pulling in, even as he's getting peppers. You know, that's one of the... That's one of the earmarks of life on the Gulf Coast. It's one of the places, maybe one of the few places, where you can get really good peppers coming in with really good broccoli at the same time. Not at all times of the year, but it's one of the nice things about December and January, is if you manage to keep your peppers going, and it's possible to do it, there are a lot of ways to do it. This would have been a fairly easy year to keep them going. All you'd had to do was cover them during that brief cold spell, and they'd keep growing, keep producing like crazy. And then you got the broccoli to go with it. It'd be really nice. John in Irvington sent me a photo of of a stink bug. You know, there's several types of leaf-footed stink bugs. And, boy, I wish I could remember the names of them all. Well, I only sort of wish I could remember the names of them all. It would be useful at times like this. But there are a couple of different, two or three different kinds of stink bugs. Some of them have a flatter back and aren't quite so large. And I would say they're the biggest problems. They're less of a problem. The biggest stink bugs people are seeing now under their eaves, it's really funny, they do show up under the eaves a lot. I found that there is a tree that they will gravitate to, John. And I will see them hanging around, just dozens of them, up and down that tree stem, particularly in winter and early in the year. And these are the giant stink bugs, the giant leaf-footed stink bugs. They tend to do more damage to trees, but yes, they can affect fruits as well. I don't think they're the biggest problems on satsumas. That's my belief, because the ones I see mostly clustered on oranges and satsumas and tomatoes and peppers and beans are not these really big stink bugs. The really big stink bugs tend to go after, I'm not sure what. It's not that they never use the garden fruits, but they tend to be on other things, trees and other things. I don't know exactly what they're eating. I need to figure that out. But I think that is not the big bad one. Even though they look big and bad, they're not the worst. Does that mean you need to preserve them? That's up to you. It's up to where you choose to use your energy expenditure. You know, do you want to spend it on something that probably doesn't make much difference? Yeah, you could. I wouldn't worry about those quite as much. They're kind of big and they're kind of cool. If one happens to get under your foot, you wouldn't feel bad about stepping on it, but I wouldn't go out of my way to kill those. That's my belief. There are other stink bugs that are more of a problem, the intermediate-sized stink bugs, and my goodness, they starts with an L, and I can't remember the Latin name, and it wouldn't matter to you if I could. But we're going to call it the medium-sized stink bugs, the medium-sized leaf-footed stink bug is the big problem, and not those big ones, not the big ones that you're seeing. Have y'all seen those? They look like these big sort of, if you can imagine an insect looking like a rhinoceros, that's kind of what they're like. They're kind of got these big, big epaulets on their shoulders and big things that stick out, kind of big thorns on the sides of their shoulders, and they're big. Man, they're big. They're impressive. And I don't think they do as much damage as the smaller ones, which have the smaller little thorns sticking out that look that are less spooky looking, but probably do more damage. I'll try to find the names of those. I know it matters to you to have the exact names. I'll give them to you in Latin. But I think that one's okay. That one's okay, John. Brian has a great question. Boy, and it could take a while to answer. But Brian says, you know, my house was built above the floodplain with red clay soil. You can't dig down 2 inches without hitting red clay. This is a big issue. One of the things I remind people is that the kinds of soils that people want for building houses is not the kind of soil that people want for building gardens. And so when you build a new house, if you think that's good soil for gardening in, ooh. And the closer you get to the house and the closer you get to where people were working, the worse the soil will be. I always say, particularly for new houses, within the first 3 or 4 feet of the house, oh, it's just terrible. I mean, it is the worst place to garden. Do anything you can to move away from the house. There are many reasons for doing that. Do not put your beds too close to the house. Let me tell you a little secret. If you just left a little gap about 2 to 3 feet right between the wall and where your garden bed starts, where you do nothing except leave a gap, maybe even put gravel, nobody's going to notice. And in fact, your garden is going to look better if you will start your garden. At least leave a 2-foot gap before you try to start your garden. and make your beds between 2 feet and, let's say, 6 feet, if you want a 4 foot wide bed, between 2 feet and 6 feet from the house. Makes a big difference in how that plant will perform, I promise. It's even better if you start 3 feet and go 3 feet and 7 feet, and have your bed be in that little 4 foot space between 3 foot and 7 feet from the house. Just a thought there. But sometimes that red clay is all over the yard, like it is in Brian, and you got a problem. Brian, here's the first thing. That soil has been compacted because they packed it down. They thought, you know, everybody wants the same kind of soil we've got for building our house, so we're just going to pack the whole thing down. They packed it down as hard as they could. So the first thing you're going to have to do is crack it. I'm going to come back when we get through with this break, and we're going to tell you about what cracking means, how to crack that red clay soil, and then we're going to have to build up on top of it. And we'll talk about that when we come back.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, we're back. Listen, this red clay soil issue, when people build houses, when folks build houses, they want good, heavy, compacted, dense soil through which no roots will ever penetrate. That's just what they want. So they bring in this kind of engineered red clay. It's, you know, they kind of think about it harder. They probably think about the kind of soil they're bringing in for your house harder than you think about the kind of soil you're growing your plants in. And they bring it in, and spread it out, and then you try to grow plants in it, and it just really creates a huge problem. Huge problem. So what are you going to do? First off, where you start your beds, this is going to be pretty important. I would you're going to need a garden fork. Brian, you're going to need a garden fork. You know what a garden fork looks like. It's got the four tines that are kind of thick. Get a good one. Don't skimp, because they're cheap ones don't last. Good ones don't last if you use a lot of them. You use it a lot. But it's a good tool. It's better than a shovel, and particularly for your situation. And what I do with that garden fork, this is what I mean by cracking soil, and it's going to be very important with that clay soil. The clay soil is going to form a hard pan, but if you can crack it, just crack it. You're not trying to stir it up. There's no reason to stir it up. You're just trying to crack it to create these fissures, these cracks in the soil, that stay open just a little bit where you want to plant your bed. Wiggle that. It's going to be really, it can be really dense at times. Take your fork and wiggle it in. You don't even have to manhandle. It's really simple. And it's great for your figure. Brian, I know you care about your figure. I know you want a nice trim waist and nice big hips. This is good for your figure. So what you do is you take that fork and you start it and you put your foot on it and you just wiggle it into the ground. That's right. You just kind of wiggle it into the ground, and then you lean back on it. Just lean back on it. Once you get it as far in as you can, lean back on it and crack the soil. Don't turn the soil. Don't do anything funky to the soil. Just crack it. Pick your fork up. Move it about a foot. Wiggle it in again. Crack it. Where you do that, you're going to make great beds. You only have to do it once. Immediately follow that with some organic matter, and it sounds like you're going to need some immediate help. You can put leaf mold on there. You can just put, if you're going to start a vegetable garden, you can just put leaf mold on there and let it break down. But where you want immediately, you're going to need pine bark mulch. And in a situation like that, I wouldn't feel bad about putting 6 inches of pine bark mulch. 6 inches deep, just lay it on where you want the beds. Now, this pine bark mulch is, and Taxman would be calling us now to tell us about it. It's sometimes called black mulch. It's sometimes composted mulch. But any kind of pine bark will work as long as it's no bigger than your fingernail. Most pieces should be smaller than your fingernail. That's the size you want. And you can plant pretty much directly into that. Don't plant above it. Just plant right into it. Don't plant below it. Just plant right into that. And keep adding organic matter to that soil, and it will make all the difference. So anytime you establish a bed, do that. Now, if you've got any questions about how to do it, any specifics about a particular plant and how it's going to do there, whether how to treat your lawn, how to do it with the fruits or vegetables or just shrubs, give me a call and we can talk about it. But those are the two specific things. You can't fix everything at once. You can't fix it all at once, but you can fix it a little piece at a time by doing that. And so give me a call if you've got any specifics. Chris, over in Pace, always good to hear from Chris, has got a question about his Satsuma, which is going to be a little harder for me to answer. You know, Chris said peaked. It looks pretty peaked. I'm glad you used that word, peaked. I don't know how to spell it either, Chris. It's one of those good old Southern words. I'll have to look it up. I have to look it up every time. Peaked. You know what peaked means. It means it don't look like, it looks a little pale, like it's not quite up to what it should be. You know, actually, I'll have to say your Satsuma doesn't look excessively peaked. It looks okay. Your roots are carefully exposed to show me that it's not planted too deep. The one thing I can say is, Chris, is that spot could be a little bit wet. Sometimes when you plant trees along the drip line right out from the house, the spots can stay a little bit wet, and if you had a wet year, it can be a little bit stressful. But this Satsuma, all in all, looks like it's handling things okay. It may need some fertilizer. I'd keep the weeds away from it as much as I could. And then next June, about next May or June, mulch it nicely, not too deep. About a couple or 3 inches of leaves would be really nice around that tree, not right up against it, but leave a little air gap, and then fertilize it. I think it may need a little fertilizer to get growing, but I think it's doing okay. I think it's doing okay as long as the ground doesn't stay too wet. Chris, you'll have to tell me. The other one's easier to answer and a lot more fun to answer. So Chris has got these weeds coming up in his yard. And he said, "Guy, you know, it looks familiar. It looks kind of vaguely edible, but they're coming up like weeds." Well, here's what I would do, Chris. I would lean over and break a piece of that leaf and smell it. And if it smells a little bit nutty, I'd think, And then I would chew on it just a little bit. And if it tastes kind of like nutty with a little bit of a peppery quality zing to it, I'd say, "Ooh, I grew arugula here once. It went to seed. The seedlings are coming up all over my garden. Looks like arugula to me. I could be wrong, but boy, it sure does look like arugula. Got the same flowers, got the same leaves. You have a bonus crop of arugula, which is really nice. I never get enough of arugula. If you have any extra that you want to share with me, you feel free to do that. But I think it's arugula, Chris. How's that? You can message me back and about the Satsuma if you see anything particularly peaked about it that worries you. Or if you think the ground is a little excessively wet, we can talk about that. But I think it's doing okay. I think it's doing okay. All right, folks. Feel free to give me a call this morning. I'm trying to get through these through the text. I think I've caught up with the text so far. And I hope I've helped Brian there with some of his problems in his garden. The red clay can be a big issue. It can be a big issue that people put around these houses. But it's you can fix it. I think of a number of problems in the garden, like David's water oak trees, trying to get St. Augustine to grow into water oak trees. That's a hard problem. But fixing red clay, it's relatively easy. You just got to do the right things. You don't want to stir it up. You don't want to mix it up. You just want to put some cracks in it. Just put some cracks in it where you want those beds to be. Then don't run over it with your car. Don't run over it with your feet. Don't run over it with your whatever. Crack it, leave it open, then put some organic matter on top, and the two will begin to work together, and you'll end up with halfway decent soil before it's all over with. Pretty good soil, actually. And that's the way to make it work. Thomas, I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on, Bill, and a belated Merry Christmas. Haven't put my bells away yet, but I got my horn out for the new year. I got my horn.
That's good.
You're talking about, and it's hard. I feel like David, every couple of minutes, I think, the tax man's going to call. It's amazing his presence was and how it affected so many people. The red clay, they bring in that red clay to compact for pouring the slabs, and they tamp it down real tight in order to take that concrete slab. They put rebar over it first, and they have a machine that actually tests the density of the compaction of that red clay, and it's nuclear powered. You have to wear special goggles and a hand thing, and you roll it out onto the clay, and the probe goes down and it tests and to see if it can support a cement slab, and then they put the if it does, they get an okay. I did it for a while, and then they put the rebar, and then they can pour the slab. That's why they bring that clay in there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You can diffuse the problem of growing plants around it because they just put it everywhere when they bring it in.
Yep.
And it extends way past the slab areas and stuff like that. But like you say, break it, organic material, broken down bark, oak leaves. You're right in business, Bill.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds just great. You know, I had no idea that this was about the radioactive. I don't even understand why a tensionometer or whatever it is that you would need a radioactive material in it. But I'll have to look that up. That's weird.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I balked at it after I read more about it, and I quit that company. Actually, and it was a in Florida, and I would go down with these big building projects, and they have a development where they're building like 150 homes and stuff, and it'd give me assignment. I'd go out and check maybe six or seven slabs a day with this machine and cover it and uncover it, and I got really nervous because they had a little a chip, I guess you would say, of nuclear material to operate it. So it made me nervous, and I quit.
Yeah, so that is very interesting.
I think that's some of my problems. I think that's why my teeth fell out. I stutter and some other thing problems I got.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I don't really understand how they work. But was it measuring soil tension? Is that water? Is soil water tension, or what does it do? What's the name of this machine?
Measuring the compaction of the ground of the clay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Measuring that compaction to see if it was compacted enough in order to support a cement slab. Okay. If it was real weak, the cement would probably sag and wouldn't keep up the rebar. But I think if you want more information, just ask a contractor. I'm sure there's one listening to us that knows about it.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Well, I've actually seen tools that measured it, but I haven't seen. It sounds like what they're using for house building is a little more. It's different than what I'm using. And once again, says that the needs of a house builder are not the needs of a gardener. That building a house and building a garden.
Sometimes they intersect. But you're right. The needs they don't have a summit and. And talk about the plants when they're building the house. No, I don't.
That's right.
Never heard of a summit, a plant summit, or
I like that. I like that. That's good. No, I don't think they have plant summits when they're thinking about building your house.
Thank you very much for having me on. Yeah. And all the best luck in the new year. And I really enjoy your show. Look forward to it every year, and I'm maybe going to try to grow something this year.
All right, good, Thomas. I hope you do.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Just to follow up, one of the things we don't think about when it comes to gardening and soils in particular is that the density of the soil is one of the most important factors for growing, if not the most important factor for growing. And we don't have a good way of measuring it. So, people say, oh, I got to get a soil test to find out how my garden is. And I keep saying, no, you just missed it. Because that soil test is not going to tell you anything about the most important thing in the soil, which is how dense that soil is. And here's what I mean by that. If you're building a house, you want that soil to be as dense as possible. They make machinery, as Thomas is saying, that actually is designed to compact that soil so it is so dense that it would be very hard to dig. That's how dense it is. Because that's what they want the house to be built on. We do that unintentionally all the time. And I don't think people realize it. When you park your car in the yard, you have no idea what that's like for the soil. I mean, so when you run over a field, and we used to do this all the time when I was a kid. Take the truck out on a spring day, run through the fields in the truck just because it was fun and because we could drive the truck in the fields, so we couldn't drive it anywhere else. It did terrible damage to those soils. And we kind of ignored that. We ignored that. But it's something to think about. It's easy to compact soils. It's hard to uncompact them, but we can talk more about that. So you feel free to give us a call next week. I hope we answered some of your questions this week. I hope we'll be able to answer them, more of them, in the coming year. I keep thinking about it. It is New Year's. And I'm thinking about these folks that were down there on those hills, south of Mobile, those hills that became Dauphin Island, that great line of hills, looking out at the shoreline well south of Dauphin Island, the delta well south of Dauphin Island. And they were looking for these creatures that they had followed, that had fed them well when they first came, the mastodons, the mammoths, the buffaloes, the camels, all of these unusual creatures, and they had wiped them out. They were gone. They had nothing left to eat. The climate was changing again. Things were changing. They had to adjust. That's where we are now in a lot of ways. It's catching up with us. Our oysters are gone from Mobile Bay. That is just enough to make you cry. The white shrimp, harder to find. Crabs, very expensive. things are changing. We've changed the world just like they had changed the world. It's time that we begin to understand how to adapt. We're going to have to start thinking about how to adapt to this new world. They found new crops. They found new things to eat. We may have to think, look around us and find new things that work for us here along the Gulf Coast. It's useful to think about life in the Old South and how it's changed. That's one of the things we did today. What was it like? Not just in your grandparents' day, not just in your childhood, but 10,000 years ago here along the Gulf Coast. Because we're at one of those great junctures again where things are going to be changing pretty dramatically again. Good time to think about it. Good time to think about what's happened before and what happens in the future. Hey, it was fun. Let's do it again next week. Give us a call. I'm going to be trying to figure out what's going on with these satsumas. Boy, that's a weird-looking thing. We'll try to figure it out, Vanna. If you have any questions, save them up and give us a call next week. Good to talk to you, as always. See you next year. It's Playing Gardening for the Gulf Coast.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. And I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that driving knew.